Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of 99 Problems But A Boss Ain't One. I'm one of your co-hosts, Michelle Pratt, and I'm offer a training and coaching business called Dive Deeper Development.
And I'm your other co-host, Katie Carlisle, and I run a Squarespace web design and training business under the brand of Squarespace Queen.
And today we're talking about expanding your offering. So imagine this, you're in business, you've got customers and things are going great.
Woo.
But there may come a point where you are either where you want to do something else and expand your skills, or maybe it's that your customers love you so much, they want more goods and services from you and they want them from you specifically. So how do you add more services into your offering? How do you expand what you do? But also, what do you do if your new service involves a new skill set as well? So this is something we found a few freelancers come across from time to time after they've been going for a little while. They decide they want to launch another product or service. Katie, why might this be challenging? It's exciting, but why might it also be a bit of a problem?
Well, I think part of it is that it depends why you're actually wanting to add a new service. And you know, we've talked in the previous episode about starting actually a whole new different business or a side project or something new that's separate to what you're doing, but this is more along the lines of growing your existing project or business and adding more services to it. But it depends on why you're going to be adding something. Is it because your customers are asking? Is it because you're wanting to diversify your income? So it'll be a problem because you might not have the skills or the knowledge or the tools, literally, like, you know, you might not have the software or the physical tools that you need to do it. It might require a cash injection. There's quite a few potential barriers there to doing that. If your customers are asking you, then you know there's a demand, but you might not have the skills. If it's something that you think you want to offer, you might not know whether there's a demand, even if you do have the skills. So there's quite a few reasons why it could be a problem, but it's still worth thinking about because you're not going to stay in business by offering the same thing in the same way forever. So the idea of keeping your options open, we mentioned in the last episode, don't have all your eggs in one basket. That can apply to your, you know, services that you offer as well. If you have a few different services, then you can create opportunities for growth in your business when there's naturally quieter periods. I remember going to a talk when I first started the business and the guy was telling the story about some entrepreneur. I don't know if he was real or not, but it was like one of these kind of almost parable type things of this guy installed swimming pools for the rich and famous. And then times got tough and he found that not as many people wanted swimming pools installed. But what he did was then he realized that all these people now had swimming pools that needed maintenance. So then he started offering additional services for people so that he would maintain their swimming pools for them rather than them having to do it themselves. And the ones who already had the swimming pools were very happy to do that because they had the money to do it. So he actually created a new revenue stream for himself. But I always remember that as a good example of looking for opportunities to grow the market that you're in with your existing customer base. But of course it might be also attracting new customers as well.
Yeah, and I think a big problem for freelancers this position, Katie, is sometimes people want to add new products or services in, or sometimes they want to scale as well. So we don't mean scale as in taking on staff or becoming like a big industry, but sometimes just expand what your capacity to do what you do at a larger scale. And one of the things we find people struggle with is, well, do I take on staff? Do I need another premises? If so, how much will that cost? Do I need to get a loan? And so on and so forth. And we thought about this topic. I was mentoring a lady the other day and she has a business where she can take someone's two-dimensional design for a piece of clothing and she can actually create and cut out the pattern that will help you turn it into an actual piece of clothing. She doesn't produce the clothing, but she does the pattern. What she's finding is her clients are asking her to actually now produce the clothing, which isn't something she does. She's always done the patterns and the cutting. And so now she's thinking, she said, you know, where do I start? And of course she's thinking, well, I'd need more space, I'd need more equipment, that would need more money, I need to take on staff, I can't do it on my own, where do I begin? And actually, what if I invest all my money and my effort into doing this and it turns out that that isn't a viable business for me? Will I find the right customers? Will it be worth it if I do it? So all this stuff was kind of jumbling around her head. And of course, people don't know, should I take the plunge and invest in being able to do this new thing or do this thing bigger? So that's what we're gonna look at today. And I think that's part of the problem, is knowing when to make the leap.
So Michelle, then where do we start?
Well, one of the things I suggested to this lady was actually go back to the beginning, and I said to her, did you create a business plan? And it might not be a formal business plan, but did you do some sort of market research? So most of us in the beginning don't know how to get started, and we've got to work it out. So we go to the drawing board and we go, right, which customers, where do we find them? How do you do marketing anyway? And so my suggestion was that she go back to her business plan. And most business plans will have like a one-page description of the proposition. They'll have a list of your maybe have your CV with your skills and qualifications on, so you'll know what skills are needed. You normally talk about some market research that you've done about the size of the market and people are willing to pay. And usually you'd put some numbers in there. So what would the cost be? And actually what revenue could you generate? So my suggestion to her was almost treat it like a new business. So it might be the same business and an extension of what you already do, but treat it like a new business. And if you're familiar with the business model canvas model, there's a book called Business Model Generation. There's lots of really good blogs on it or videos. Then I would suggest using a tool like that to really go back to the drawing board. And Katie, I'm interested to know, because I don't think I've ever asked you actually. I mean, I didn't start with a business plan. Did you start with a business plan, or did you have some sort of research? I mean, there's normally like a bit of a scoping phase when you start a business to work out whether you can do what you want to do for a living.
Yeah, well, when I first started, my business idea was actually totally different to what I ended up doing. So when I quit my job, my plan was to offer my services to charities and nonprofits to help them with their tech needs, which would include some website stuff, but would also include just, you know, setting up emails for them and adding blog posts to their website and stuff that I just don't really do now. But then I started using Squarespace and the rest was history. So when I had that initial plan, I didn't really do any kind of research, but I suppose I'd informally done research just through working in that world and knowing enough people in that world through volunteering and networks to know that it was a real problem that nonprofits faced. But I hadn't even got so far as kind of going, okay, so how would I get in with one of these and what can they afford and when do they do their budgets, before I pivoted to the Squarespace stuff. And because that happened quite quickly, I was starting to do the work before I'd really done a business plan. So I'd probably been doing it for several months before I actually stopped and then went back and tried to put together a sort of, yeah, like a, I'd say an informal business plan. It was never sort of meant to be something you'd give to like the bank to ask for a loan or anything. It was more to guide me. So there was a bit about objective. So I sort of, you know, put some kind of goals in there, a bit about my values. So I wrote my business values down. I think I might have done like a SWOT analysis and stuff like that, because I'd done that in my previous job. So I was quite familiar with it. So I did a bit of a SWOT analysis. So strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats, for anyone who's not familiar with the corporate jargon. And then, yeah, I wrote down who was my potential target audience, how I might find them, what content I could talk about, and I put some kind of financial goals. I don't think I really set out my overheads or anything like that, which I probably should have done.
No, I didn't either.
but yeah, it was a kind of reference point that set out. I think for me, it was actually just getting everything out of my head and into one place.
Yeah.
For me to kind of then go back and go, okay, I have a plan. It's all fine. Everything is okay. I'm not sure how useful it was, but I think it was just useful to get it out of my head and have some time kind of formalizing what I saw my business as being.
Yeah.
What about you? Did you have
one? Well, I think what you're describing there, Kate, is really good, because like I say, I'm a big fan of getting started by doing, but like you say, I think a lot of people in this position have it all jumbled up in their head, and actually I do think getting it out in some sort of plan is really helpful. I'm really not a fan of planning at all. For me, it was like the research was more word of mouth. So the first thing I did was go speak to people who did what I wanted to do. I only knew one or two of them, and I literally just reached out to them on LinkedIn, or actually went for a coffee with one guy I know. I said, right, how do I get in? Who do I approach? How do you, because I had no idea to access the industry. What do people charge? What's normal? What would they be expecting of me? And just starting to get an outline. And when I did, like you say, then you go into a piece of work, and actually what they were paying or the way we were doing things was all I ever knew. But other more experienced people were saying, well, actually this rate isn't that good. It's volume work, but the day rate isn't great. Or actually, I'm really hacked off at having to do this. I don't think that's part of the job. Or actually, I really like this kind of work. So kind of mine was very much word of mouth research or desktop research. But again, it's fumbling around. But one of the nice bits of having an existing business, you've probably learned those skills already. So even if you didn't do it like a plan or have an approach to begin with, you've probably got enough experience now to go back to the drawing board. And I mentioned the business model Campbell stuff, but Katie, I'll mention a few things you should think about to begin with. And so one of the first questions is, you mentioned customers. So if you're launching a new product or service, they might be people coming to you, but my first question would be, are these the same customers? I remember when we were talking, you were talking about expanding your training business, and I was asking you, are these the same customers? Because you can imagine you're doing website design for some people, and they might be people who don't want to do it themselves, but you're also talking about website training, and this is for people who do want to do it themselves. Are they the same people? And we were chatting about that, weren't we? Like, you know, are these the same people?
Yeah, because I did briefly plan to do online courses. I have actually now slacked that idea off. And I guess that's probably another thing to mention, is that it's okay to plan to expand your services and then to change your mind. I mean, I've been toying with the idea for a long time. I committed to it. I started trying to do it. It was too hard. Squarespace changed things all the time. It would have been a full-time job just keeping the content up to date. And I don't know how anyone else does it. Maybe they just have a disclaimer saying this is not up to date. But in the end, I was like, do you know what? No, this is too much. I don't want to just be spending all my time editing videos and stuff, re-recording things. But yeah, it was really useful to then, I think, sit with you and go through, are the people who want the online course, are they the kind of same people who want to do the face-to-face or the in-person Zoom training? Are they different to the people who, read my newsletter? Are they different to the people who want web design? Are the people who want web design but can't afford it, do they become the people who do training, or are they separate? So I think, yeah, it was really helpful for me to know that, because then I think when you know who your customers are, you can talk directly to them, and it becomes much more powerful when you're writing your content for your website or your social media posts or however you're connecting with people. You can actually feel their pain and identify them. And I think, Michelle, probably neither of us are saying go down the route of creating a super specific customer avatar where you know what they have for tea on Wednesdays. But I think having an idea of the type of people that might be interested in, if you already have access to those people in your network, is really helpful.
Yeah, and also ask yourself as well, you know, these customers, if you're doing something new or you're doing it on a larger scale, where do they hang out, and are they the same? And also where do they hang out, but also where do they look for your services? Mm-hmm. So for my pattern cutting lady, she's talking about individual designers, but actually some of the people that she is now going to be servicing are people who want to sell not massive volumes, but sort of, you know, into the dozens of products. And so it's not a massive scale, but it is an uptick in scale. So are the people who buy to her on the current scale, do they have the money, for example, to invest in a whole season's worth of stock? With what price would she offer them, and would that be enough to make that worth her while? Or if you want to look at the other way, where would she find people who would be interested in doing things on that kind of scale? And we were talking about where you'd find them. She's like, yeah, do you know what, they're probably in different places. The individuals I can probably find on Instagram very easily. The others might be more LinkedIn, or they might be in a unit as opposed to in their own house. So actually where she's got to hang around to find those new customers to work on that scale, they're going to be in very different places. So do you need a new social circle?
Like when I expanded my business to add training, and I feel like this is like our origin story, Michelle, because we knew each other a little bit vaguely through Freelance Folk. You'd come to some of the co-working things, but weren't like particularly close, I don't think. And then you came on my first ever training workshop that I did for Squarespace. And you were in that first little cohort. And I think because we'd already talked about it at the co-working sessions, it was really helpful for me to get insights into what you were looking for to get from the training, so then I could make it really relevant and helpful. And then I gave you a lift back and you cut your hand on my door, and we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, that was like the most British conversation I've ever had. Sorry to bleed all over your bathroom. Sorry, my house hurt you. Like, but yeah, but like you say, Katie, just knowing the needs of those customers. I think again, the needs are different, even if you're in a similar field, perhaps.
Exactly, and the thing, you know, we mentioned obviously, yeah, the kind of online or face to face, and if you can find somewhere where those people are asking questions, then that's like gold dust. So whether it's on like Reddit or industry specific forums or in a Facebook group or on Instagram comments or wherever you are and wherever your customers are, like try and find where they're asking questions or where they're discussing their pain, and then you can be there to kind of help them with it. It's okay to answer someone's question by saying that you are the solution, as long as you don't do it in an overly salesy way, I think. Obviously, the optimal thing is to get somebody else to recommend you. So if you know someone else in that Facebook group, you could always drop them a message. I've done this before, where I've messaged someone to be like, oh my God, this person is looking for like, you know, this company is looking for a new web designer. I really want to like do the work. Can you like tag me in the comments so that they like and recommend me in the comments, because they're in the same group and stuff like that. So that can be one way of doing it, is get other people to be your minions.
Yeah, I think that's really good, and like definitely research that new customer base. And again, Katie, like I say, you mentioned groups there, you know, are they in the same group, or there are the people that you need now in different groups? Because if people buying on a different scale, as they are in the case of my lady, do those people hang in different circles? Would they be more likely to trust that amount of money in a face-to-face network that they know, or would they be happy to buy that online? So the channels to which people come through too.
And the advantage of if you've already got a business and you're expanding and adding new services is that you'll already have probably some testimonials from people talking about what it's like to work with you, even if they're talking about a slightly different service. So, you know, someone could read one of my web design testimonials and it isn't specific to training, but they pretty much all say, Katie explains things really clearly and she's really patient and friendly and helpful. Now, all of those are super relevant to somebody who's looking for training as well. So again, I think we've talked about this in a few episodes, but people buy into you and your approach sometimes just as much as the services and work that you offer. So that gives you a good starting point. So don't feel like you have to keep one service completely separate from the other one. You can use a lot of the content and testimonials and resources that you've got for one service potentially to prop up the other one as well. So you don't have to start from scratch like you would if it was a brand new business.
Yeah, I think definitely build on what you've got, and hopefully what you're doing is an expansion or an extension of what you do. I think another thing to be clear on that subject, Katie, is also really, really, really clear on your product offering. So, and we've mentioned this before, it's about what you do. So if you offer something at the moment, like my lady offers pattern cutting, but she wants to go into actually making, then what is the proposition now? Because one is a question of design, it's quite technical. The other one is actually producing the products, is actually creating products. So the proposition is very different, and then the benefits as well. So Kate, you mentioned pain. What pains do people have? And again, we need to know that for our new offering. So people might come to you, I don't know, they might come to you for, you know, online training for quick, easy access to information on Squarespace, but actually they might come to you for one-to-one training for a more bespoke, more personal service, a feeling of someone's holding my hand and I don't feel stupid. One of those is very practical, one of those is quite emotional and relational. So what is your new proposition? Is it a departure from what you've done before? And if it is, just be really clear about what it is. If it's an extension of what you do, it might be easier, but just check in with that, because it might be easy to assume, oh, it's on the same industry, or you might offer a range of Squarespace products. You might think, oh, it's all Squarespace, it's the same, but actually those different interventions achieve very different things. They solve different pain points, yeah. And they offer different benefits. And the reason why you should know this is if you're offering value, know what it is so you can charge appropriately for it too. So you're not just like, it's not just you're offering convenience to your customer. You may offer whole new possibilities or ease or convenience or speed or whatever. And obviously you want to make sure that's reflected in your pricing, but your branding as well. So be really clear on what that proposition is, I think. And then I guess, Katie, there's kind of the practical stuff as well, which is like kind of what resources you would need. So is it more like, is it machinery or equipment, or do you just need more software licenses or subscriptions? And then of course, money, do you need a loan or a grant? And I think a lot of freelancers think, oh, I need to get a loan if I'm going to scale up, or I need a loan if I'm going to invest in this new thing that I'm going to do. And that's not always necessarily the first way to go. So be really clear on what resources are required and what steps will be needed to undertake the new service. I mean, Katie, when you've done different products or you've added new things in, I mean, what kind of things have you had to consider with regards to the actual resources and the delivery of it?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I moved from doing, certainly when I moved to doing one-to-one training, I've been offering Zoom, or I guess it used to be on Skype, but, you know, video training since way before the pandemic. So I used to do the workshops. The workshops was the first thing I added. So then that needed obviously venue hire, marketing for that, you know, some kind of event registration platform. So I just used Eventbrite, and then just making sure I had the right insurance, because before all my work had just been from home, whereas here I was, you know, going and doing a workshop where there could be like trailing cables, and obviously the venue has its own insurance normally, but you probably want some kind of public liability insurance for that potentially as well. And then I needed to think about feeding the people that came. So I mean, I just bought a really nice like M&S spread for everyone. That was my catering. I think it was a group of six of us. But just, yeah, extra things that I'd not had to think about before. And when I was kind of pricing it, I needed to factor those into the price as well. Because, again, when I've been just doing web design, other than maybe, you know, me needing to have a Squarespace subscription for my own website and maybe some very basic tools, I hadn't really needed that much. So there was a lot more overheads associated with that when I did the workshop. So that was stuff I had to consider. And then when I moved to, then doing one-to-one training, I was either doing it in person, but actually I was doing quite a lot of it via Skype at the time. Remember Skype? And I was doing that. So that required learning how to deliver things over video and making sure I knew how to screen share and record the sessions to send to them afterwards, and then have a way of, like, you know, where do I save the recording? And when I switched to using Zoom, I very quickly exceeded my cloud storage allowance and didn't want to upgrade to a new, you know, didn't want to pay for a plan. So then I changed where I saved the recording to and how I sent it out. And then when the pandemic hit, I then needed to use Zoom for more multiple group meetings. So then I had to upgrade to the paid version. And so I think it's just things like that. It's the money cost, but it's also the knowledge of learning how to use the new tools that you need to deliver the new service, which is part of it.
Yeah. And I think that's it. So all these things that Katie's just listed, I would do what she's verbally listed them down. What I would be doing at this point, if I'm thinking expanding it, is just literally brainstorm it, write it down, create a mind map, do something like that, and see if you can list all the resources that you would need. And Katie's mentioned things like, yeah, subscriptions or tools or even things like lunches, but you've mentioned insurance. I mean, I've been asked to do more face-to-face recently, having done very little, and I've had to change the insurance on my vehicle because I've now got to make sure that covers business use, which if you use it for business just one, I've now got to add that on. And yeah, like I say, like lunches, petrol, and actually it's the rate that's being offered. It's still 45p a mile, and that used to cover wear and tear, and now it barely covers fuel, but there we go. So yeah, all these different things that Katie's listing, but list them down. And actually, I would also say list your process.
Yeah.
So what will you do before or during after? So what will come before? What is the stuff I do with the customer? And what's the aftercare bit? And list it down. And again, you'll need that to work out your numbers. And Katie's mentioned skills and time. Yeah, you may have to learn a new skill set. And that then really begs another question, really, which is, do you then get someone in? So do you outsource that and pay someone else? Or are you personally going to learn the additional skills required? And again, that's got to be fit down with your costs as well. And then also think about other relationships too. So which relationships will you need? So which suppliers or vendors will you now need to be working with? Do you have those contacts? Do you know somebody who has them? But also competition as well. Do you have any competition in that space? What is it like? What are the competitors doing? And also, what mentors do you have in your new direction too? Do you know someone who already does it, and can you pick their brains? Because they should be able to tell you pretty quickly whether you're on the right track or not.
Definitely, because like when you were saying about the processes and everything, Michelle, I think, and you know, brainstorming everything, I think if you can speak to somebody who's done that service already, then that's going to save you so much time, because there's probably going to be something that you don't think about when you're starting a new offering, and if someone can help you not miss that. Especially if it's something financial or something that's crucial to a good experience for the customer or the client, then that'd be like a massive game changer. And I know sometimes it feels a bit uncomfortable to ask people for help, but people are generally happy because they've probably received help earlier in their careers or wished that they'd received help. And most decent people are happy to like pay it forward and help you. I mean, I've got something on my website that I've been trialing that's gone really well actually, where I basically I say to people, you can pick my brain for an hour about whatever you want, freelancing, living differently, Squarespace, moving to Canada, whatever. Oh yeah, I'm moving to Canada. I don't know if I've said that on the podcast before.
No, I don't think you have. Yeah.
I feel like I just suddenly accidentally did a big reveal that I'm moving to Canada. Guys, I'm moving to Canada. That's exciting. I'll still be freelancing. That's a big expansion of my of my offering, is yeah. That I'll now be, I guess that's another way to expand your offering actually, is to target a new market with the same service. So I will be doing all the same stuff over there, but I will now have the North American continent that I will be trying to work with more. I have had some customers and clients over there before, but I'll be targeting them much more while still working with my kind of network in the UK as well. So that's another version of expansion.
You'll be paid in two currencies now as well. And as you say, that's a whole yes. different thing.
It is going to be a world of pain. So that's again, yeah, like with the move, that's that, and the kind of then the new market, that's prompted me to then be like, okay, so I need to understand how tax works in Canada. I need to understand how tax works in the UK. I need to understand how they work together. Where is it strategic for me to spend my money and things like that? So anyway, after getting distracted by Canada, on my website, I have this thing where people can pick my brains for an hour in exchange for a donation to a charity. And I've kind of put the themes of the types of charities that I would ideally like them to support. And that's worked really well, because then people feel more comfortable asking to pick my brains, because I have formalized the offering and it makes everyone feel good. Because they feel like, yeah, I'm donating to a charity. They can choose the charity they want to donate to. By the way, I totally stole this idea of someone else, but I can't remember who, so I wish I could credit them. But I did. I saw someone doing it with Ukraine specifically, with the kind of skills available in exchange for donation. And I was like, oh, such a good idea. So then, yeah, I've had about 5 people do it so far.
That's great.
So then I'm like, cool, I've facilitated 5 charities get a donation they wouldn't otherwise have got. And I've got a really low threshold for donation. I think I've got a suggested amount of like a minimum of like £5 or £10. Most people have given more. So I'm like, cool, the charity's got money. The person who's picking my brains has kind of got some knowledge, but also feels good for giving to charity. And I feel like I'm helping people as well. So it's like a virtuous triangle. So there may even be people like that that you can ask. A lot of local areas have a specific mentoring offering, especially if you're starting a new business. And I would probably think they would include adding a new offering to your business, because anything to do with growth, especially, they love. So I've been a mentor for the growth company, which used to be called the Business Growth Hub in Manchester. I'm a mentor now for Business Wales. And so they offer mentoring for free to businesses in the area. So there's loads of ways that you can find somebody who is legitimately there to help guide you through the process and share their experience. And they may not always be from exactly the same industry, but depending on your needs, you might get matched to somebody in a different industry, but with particular skills. But yeah, if you need somebody who's been there and that can actually help you through the process, then there are plenty of opportunities to get there. Michelle, you work with some funded mentoring schemes specifically for women, don't you?
Yeah, I've done quite a few with mentor refugees, people leaving prison, but also anyone who's just in a rural area trying to start up as well. So that's not even dependent on growth, that's just people who want to start. So like you say, Katie, check your local government website and you should find some really good ones out there.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, whatever it is you're looking to do, you're probably not the first to do it. And even if what you're offering is unique, the nature of what you're trying to do is probably not that unique. So chances are someone can offer something. And it may be that different people hold different answers to your many questions. And then Katie, once you've done all that, I mean, we've talked about mentoring, we've talked about the skills, the knowledge and all of this. Then the next thing I would suggest people do is check the numbers. And there's no getting away from that. So once you've done all those other questions, you should now know the physical physical costs of things you have to buy, but I'm hoping you're getting a sense by now of your time that's going to take you, but also the value you offer in terms of your skill and your worth as well. So at this point, do your numbers, work out your costs, your fixed cost, your variable cost, your, you know, your regular cost, your irregular ones, and then once you've done that, of course you can work out your revenue stream. So how are you going to do your pricing, what are you going to charge, what packages or pricing structures will you offer, and then the final question of course is, are your customers willing to pay it? So you might need to go back to those customers and find out, is it worth it for you, but also is it a price that they're willing to pay? And you might find at this point that as an established player in the market, they can just do things at a scale that you can't, and you might not be able to charge what you want. But if your customers really want to work with you, you may find that even if there are bigger players in the market, and they might be willing to spend that to work with you. So until we have the numbers, we don't know, but I think that's the best way to take the guesswork out of it.
Will your customers pay it is actually kind of the fundamental question that you need to answer before you spend loads of time doing all the other stuff. So yes, you probably need to have an idea of some of your numbers and overheads and things like that in order to get a ballpark figure of how much you can charge for the service. But if there's not a demand for it at that rough price, then you're going to really struggle with all of the rest of it. So before you spend ages creating something, try and find ways to validate that idea and test the demand for the product, whether that's a pre-sale or a survey. Ideally getting somebody to pre-buy and put their money where their mouth is, even if it's for a discounted or early bird rate, is probably the best way of testing if something is really gonna work. But even just, you know, anecdotally chatting to people, getting them to sign up for a wait list is a good indicator of whether there's a demand for that product. And then once you've got a group of people on that waitlist, you can always kind of test different pricing options with them and, you know, ways for you to add value to set yourself apart from other people who, like you say, Michelle, maybe they're doing something at scale, but maybe there's something extra you can offer, like that personalized touch or whatever. Another big question, will you enjoy doing the other thing, yeah, the new offering?
Yeah, and this goes back to my lady I was talking to earlier. You know, I said to her that you're now going to go from doing technical designs to making products. Is this something that you would enjoy? Do you really want to get into this end of the business? And she said, yes. But I know a lot of people who have a skill, lots of makers, creators and artists being just one example, and they go, well, there's not enough money in art, so I have to either make postcards or teach. And one of them said to me, is teaching the only way? I really have no passion for teaching. Surely there's got to be something else I can do besides just teaching people. It doesn't appeal to me at all. And my tip was, well, no, don't go into teaching how people had to do art if you've got no passion for it. And so you might be able to make more money, but you're going to be spending more time and effort on it too. So is that going to take away from what you enjoy? Are you generally going to get a buzz out of doing it?
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly the place I got to with my online course stuff, was that I realized the amount of time I would have to spend constantly updating it was just going to make me really grumpy. Like, I found it hard enough to edit these podcasts. Like, I actually really enjoy the process of editing them, but like, I think if I was to have to do that, you know, like, I find it hard to set aside the time to do it. Once I start doing it, I get really into it. But then, like, I just, like, I know that I'm always rubbish at recording videos for clients and stuff. And I was like, why am I trying to do this? Because I think it was that thing, like, I feel like I should. People are asking me for it. It's a passive income, in quote marks. And I was like, yeah, but I think it would just take up my time and make me miserable and take me away from doing all the other things I want to do. So I just, even though I'd put quite a lot of investment into it, in the end I sacked it off because it just wasn't right. And I think that's important to know that you can do that.
Yeah, and Katie, once you've done all of this and you've answered that question, you know, will I enjoy it? We need to get going. And there's three letters we like on this podcast. How would you say we would get going?
M to the V to the P, baby. We love a minimum viable product on this podcast.
Absolutely.
And in case you've been asleep for the last 80-something episodes, a minimum viable product is basically what's the smallest, cheapest, easiest, quickest version of the thing that you can do to check whether your idea works. So we talked a bit before about kind of pre-validating with, like, you know, an early sign-up or wait list. Once you've kind of got to that point, what is the smallest option that will work for your product? So, you know, if you are selling an online course, could you pre-sell, you know, could you sell access to the first module? Could you just do a 30-minute workshop rather than 8 hours of online content first to kind of gauge the response to it? If you're creating some kind of software? Can you do a kind of very basic version of it first with just the most crucial features? If you were talking about the person we spoke about who's doing the clothes making, what's the simplest thing to make and that she does patterns for, and maybe start with that? Or even before she starts making it, is there a way to actually still get that outcome without her having to do it? Is there somebody else she can outsource it to test to the demand before she then starts offering it herself? So
definitely, I think, can you collaborate? Can you use someone else's resources, whether that's borrowing someone's equipment? Could you rent the equipment? Yeah. Does someone else have a network or distribution channel? You know, before you commit to getting a space to upscale your production or do workshops, does someone else have a space you could borrow or hire? And you know, sometimes people say they want a shop. I'm like, well, okay, great. But could you start by having a shelf or a few shelves in someone else's existing shop? So it's nice because it cuts out the risk, like Katie said, it tests demand, but also you can get your idea going as well. So I think that's something to ask. And some people say, oh, I need to take on staff, and there's nothing wrong with taking on staff, but it is a cost and it is a commitment. So my question would be, well, actually, would a contract work for a fixed period, or actually would it be better just to take on other freelancers on an associate or ad hoc basis? And you can still have contracts in place for that to keep it quite ad hoc, but that way you don't have to you know, commit to having staff in order to do something. So as Katie said, can you fill a smaller or simpler or a more simple order in order to get it over the line in the short term?
Yeah, and I think someone like virtual assistants is so useful in these scenarios as well, because a lot of the VAs I've worked with can turn their hands to lots of different things, and they can create content, they can do social media posts for you, they can set up courses for you, they can do the market research for you. So again, if you've not got the time or the capacity to kind of do everything, you can outsource some of it as well. And like I say, collaborate with other people. Can you do a skill swap? I've done quite a few skill swap in my time. You know, someone needed a website, I wanted whatever they were offering, so no money, exchanged hands. So there are ways to get started for free or very low cost if you get a bit creative. But then say you've kind of established, yeah, you're kind of, yeah, my minimum viable product seems to be working, there's a bit of demand. What's next then when you actually want to make the leap, Michelle?
Yeah, and I think that's it, Katie. I think there will come a point where you will have to make the commitment to decide whether it's a viable service or product for you. So I think some people say, well, I need to know it will work and then I'll go for it. And I think it's definitely true. You need to do some research. So do your homework and then take as much of the guesswork out of it as you possibly can. But once you're never going to remove all of the guesswork. So once you've done your homework, you've done your numbers, you've tested the market, you've spoken to customers, you've spoken to competitors or mentors, then you've got to say, right, it seems viable, I'm just going to have to go for it. So then you've almost got to flip your mindset to, okay, now I've committed to it and I'm going to make it work. So once I've invested in the time or the equipment or the staff, now I'm going to bloody well make sure it does work, and you go out there and find customers and sign people up, or get someone to do the selling for you if that's not your thing. Get someone else to bring some customers in to make your new offering work. So it's a bit of both. You're never going to be 100% ready. And so, you know, do your homework and then commit. But once you're in, yeah, just you have to work your socks off until it's over the line, until it gets to a point where it's a bit more stable, which is not unlike you did at the beginning, Katie. At some point in your current business, you had to do that, get yourself established and get it up and running. And of course, you've done it once. It should be a lot quicker this time around.
But I think we sometimes forget what it was like at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I think definitely when people tell their business stories, I think they edit out, not even consciously, but they edit out a lot of the detail that happens at the beginning, and a lot of the like grunt work that you do, and a lot of the setbacks and things. The odd setback makes it in as a funny anecdote, but then like just the kind of day to day, just pushing that boulder up the hill until it gets there. We get kind of to the point where like, oh yeah, it's actually really easy to do business. Yeah, it's super fun. And it's like, actually, it can be really hard at times. So I feel like everyone who's in business should be made to add an extra service or launch another offering at some point to just keep them humble and remind them what it's like at the beginning. But maybe that's a bit mean, I don't know.
No, I think it's a good idea. I think, okay, Katie, things that used to scare you don't scare you now. And as you say, you do get a bit complacent, and you're going to have to get back into that place of being a little uncomfortable, a little confused, and a little bit fearful again. And as you say, it's quite humbling. I don't think it does any of us any harm.
I think it's really good for you to do that. I think it's another benefit to adding a new offering is that not only will you'll learn new skills, you'll kind of have to refresh your existing ones where you maybe got a bit complacent about them. So yeah, I think do that. And then yeah, just keep on cracking on until it's up and running, assess how well it's working. And then maybe that becomes the main thing. And then you start to phase out the old thing. Maybe you have both of them in parallel. Maybe you add another service. You know, it can then grow from wherever it is. But basically, that's it. Super easy. Piece of cake.
Easy, easy. Simple as that. All done.
So, Michelle, at the end of the podcast, we always like to ask each other one top tip or takeaway from the episode. So for you, if you were branding your services, what's one tip or takeaway you'd say to listeners?
Yeah, I think my first one is, Katie, just go back to the beginning and have some sort of plan and all that stuff you verbalised earlier. Get those thoughts down on paper or a mind map or something and just, yeah, try and capture some semblance of a plan. You're older, you're wiser, you're more experienced in business. You should be able to do this quite consciously, even if you bootstrapped it and blagged it at the beginning. You should be in a good position to do that now. What about you?
I think leverage what you've got already, whether that's your network that you can ask for help, the skills you already have, the testimonials you already have, the knowledge, the tech, whatever it is, just don't feel that you need to reinvent the wheel for this new offering. You can build it upon the foundation of your previous business, is what I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of things to build on.
So as always, we'd love to hear from you and hear if you have recently launched or are planning to launch any new expansions to your services, or if there's just any other challenges you'd like us to tackle on the podcast. You can reach us on Twitter at 99problemscast, that's the number 99, problems, and then cast as in podcast. And we'll see you again for another episode of 99 Problems, But a Boss Ain't One.